You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. In recent months, we've had more than one program devoted to labor and our employment law. And tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, we bring you Employment Law 101. We've spoken about the nuts and bolts of labor law. We've talked a bit about employment law issues. Tonight, we take a step back. You need to hire someone. Just where do you go? In a highly specialized field, how do you find a lawyer? How do you find the right lawyer in the field of employment? My guests are all members of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. On the phone tonight, we have Jessica Riggin of Rutkin, Highland & Riggin, LLP in San Francisco. Ms. Riggin litigates individual and class action cases on behalf of employees, including claims for violations of wage and hour and overtime laws, sexual harassment claims, whistleblower and retaliation claims, and discrimination and equal pay claims. Also on the phone tonight, Lisa Lawson of Pennington Lawson in San Francisco. Ms. Lawson has over 20 years' experience in litigating high-stakes employment-related cases and advising California employers and executives. And here in the studio with me tonight, we have Ellen Mendelson of Ellen Mendelson PC in San Francisco. With over 25 years' experience, Ellen Mendelson focuses on representing public and other employees. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of the calling area, that is, again, if you're calling from outside of San Francisco, we have a toll-free number available for you at 866-798-8255. If you want to call and have us pay for it, 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic of employment law. You're not limited to the exact point that we may be in our conversation. Uniquely tonight, if you have any employment law question regarding an ongoing case, that's a case that's currently litigation, and you want my guest to be able to answer your question, please don't identify either part of the litigation unless specifically asked by the guests. With that, Ellen, Jessica, Lisa, let me welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening. Thank you.
I guess my first question is, let's take a step back. Just what is employment law? Tell me a little bit about how labor and employment law differ.
Well, labor law generally arises out of collective bargaining agreements, MOUs that are between employers and organized labor that regulate how the employment relationship works. In terms of private employees, different laws apply that control the employer-employee relationship.
How does it differ from employment law?
It's all employment law.
Now, it's my understanding that lawyers in this area tend to practice in very specific subspecialties. Can you give me a sense of just how an employment practice would be so specialized?
Well, this is Lisa. I think if you're an employee and you're looking for representation, you might want to think about what type of claim you have. There are a lot of claims these days being brought for California wage and hour violations, which is a category of claims that includes overtime violations or violations of meal and rest period rules or also violations of the minimum wage laws. And you'll find that there are a lot of employment lawyers out there nowadays that specialize in wage and hour law. Then there's also other types of employment laws that have nothing to do with the actual payment of wages, but rather protect rights of employees to be treated fairly and equally at work. So, for example, discrimination laws would fall into that category. And then some employees have claims that involve executive compensation, compensation that is comprised of stock options and things along those lines. And there are other lawyers that specialize in executive compensation laws.
And interestingly, the state bar has no certified specialization for any employment lawyers except for workers' compensation attorneys. And the State Bar certifies specialists. Jeff, I believe you're certified as certified specialist in criminal law, for instance. In employment law, other than the workers' compensation bar, there are no certified specialists.
And actually, as a recent chair of the Board of Legal Specialization, and I'm only speaking for myself, I'm not speaking for the bar, I'm not speaking for the board, but as somebody who recently chaired that board, I can tell you that one of the factors that's a little harder to work with when dealing with labor and employment is that under that umbrella, there are lots of different practice types, lots of different subspecialties. So to try to find and administer standards would be very difficult unless you have several different tracks going because of all the different practice types.
I understand.
Given this, it really brings me to the fundamental question that I want to answer tonight, which is, given all these different practice types, how can somebody hope to go about finding the right lawyer for them?
So this is Jessica. I think there's a few different questions that someone who thinks they have experienced an issue at work needs to answer. And that may be easy or that may be hard, depending on what the potential issue or violation is. If it's something like sexual harassment, for example, those claims are typically fairly easy to self-identify. Someone's been sexually harassed at work. They often know what that issue is, know why they're calling a lawyer, and often can go about that search because with more ease because they're able to look for lawyers who specialize in sexual harassment cases and can communicate to the attorney that that's what their claim is and that's what they're seeking help regarding. Now, that can be more complicated if someone knows that they have issues at work but is unable to self-identify that claim. And what I mean by that is, with the category of wage and hour claims that Lisa described earlier, it can be really hard for an employee to self-identify that violation. So, for example, if someone is misclassified as an independent contractor, which is a category of claims that we're seeing much more frequently these days, and I can explain a little bit more about that down the road, you need to have some base legal knowledge to be able to know whether or not you suffered a violation and to understand what type of lawyer you need to help remedy that. So it can be much more difficult with some of those wage and hour violations to even know in the first place what type of lawyer you need. And so I think that's the first hurdle, is knowing what type of violation you've suffered. The second hurdle is then finding the right lawyer for you. I think there's a few issues with that. I'd welcome Lisa and Ellen's thoughts, but in particular, you know, I think having an in-person meeting is really key. I try to do that with all of my potential clients, because I think when you talk about an attorney-client relationship, the word relationship is really essential, and making sure that you're able to clearly communicate and have that personal relationship.
Yeah, this is Lisa. I think those are all wise. That's all wise input. One thing before you even get to that point, I think that some potential clients don't realize at first, is that there are some lawyers that represent only employers, and there are some lawyers that represent only employees, and then there are some that do both. And so typically the very large firms that have a specialty in employment law will not represent individuals, because that will oftentimes pose conflicts for them with other corporate clients that they may have. And so if you're an employee and you have a claim, your best bet is probably not to start with one of the state's biggest law firms, but rather start with somebody who's in a smaller firm, as that person's more likely to represent either both employers and employees or only employees.
The Bar Association of San Francisco has a wonderful lawyer referral service that you can call up, and you get a screener, and you tell the screener your problem, and they write it down, and then they shop your case to a bunch of attorneys here in the San Francisco area to see whether you can, whether an attorney is interested in speaking with you about your case. And for a half an hour, for $45, you can go and talk to an attorney about the facts in your case. And the attorney cannot give advice on at that meeting. We can tell you what the law says, but the attorney-client relationship begins when we give advice. So until there is a signed agreement between you and the attorney, they really can't give you any advice.
And for those who were listening last week, we had the salient powers that be from several of the local bar associations. We had from San Francisco both representatives of the Justice and Diversity Center as well as the Lawyer Referral Service, Lawyer Referral and Information Service in San Francisco. In San Mateo County, we had the executive director of the San Mateo County Bar. We had the executive director and general counsel of the Alameda County Bar. And within our listening area, every one of the local county bars servicing you has a lawyer referral service available. They all offer the same service. They tend to divvy up who does what geographically. So if you're in San Francisco or Marin, you would get that information from the Lawyer Referral and Information Service of the San Francisco County Bar. If you're in San Mateo or northern Santa Clara County, you would call the San Mateo County Bar. Similarly, Alameda, Contra Costa County, each has their own county bar. All four of these bars have these services available.
The two other organizations that are employment law specialized that I would mention are CELA and NELA. So if you are an employee looking for representation, they're phenomenal organizations. CELA stands for the California Employment Lawyers Association. NELA is the National Employment Lawyers Association. Both are organizations, I will say, in the interest of full disclosure, of which I am a member, and they are made up of plaintiff side, meaning employee side, attorneys. And they, if you go online to both of their websites, you are also able to search for attorneys by practice area. So if you are able to get past that first hurdle that I mentioned of self-identifying what type of lawyer you need, so for example, a lawyer who specializes in sexual harassment or wrongful termination or wage and hour, you can click a box and search for attorneys who are members of those organizations, and so who have those professional affiliations. You also don't have to click any box if you're not sure what type of employment lawyer you need.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight's show was produced in conjunction with the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. Tonight we feature Employment Law 101, How to Find a Lawyer in This Highly Specialized Area. My guests are all members of the Labor and Employment Section of the California Lawyers Association. Jessica Riggin of San Francisco with the firm of Rutkin, Highland & Riggin, LLP. Jessica litigates individual and class action cases on behalf of employees, including claims for violations of wage and hour and overtime laws, sexual harassment claims, whistleblower and retaliation claims, and discrimination and equal pay claims. Lisa Lawson of the firm of Pennington Lawson in San Francisco. Ms. Lawson has over 20 years of experience litigating high-stakes employment-related cases and advising California employers and executives. And Ellen Mendelson of L&A Mendelson PC, San Francisco, 25 years experience, focusing on representing public and other employees. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us right here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. We've been talking about how employment lawyers have structured their practice, things you want to know in finding the right lawyer for you. But as always, you can call us regarding your employment law question tonight. You don't have to jump in right where we happen to be in the conversation. Uniquely tonight, if you're calling about an employment law litigation case that's currently ongoing, you may limit my guest's ability to answer your questions if you identify the parties to that litigation. So, again, call us without identifying the parties unless you're specifically asked by the guest. If you're outside of our local area, again, call 866-798-8255. So we were talking about things you can do to find the right lawyer. For many areas, you can contact the lawyer referral services of the various local bar associations, as we said. But at this point, I wanted to ask a few specific questions about, first about you all, and then about some of the specific questions within the field. Maybe each of you could take a few moments and talk about some of the specialized areas in which each of you practice. Who would like to go first? Seeing no hands, I'll point to Ellen, who's sitting here at the table with me.
Okay. I have my own law practice, my own law corporation. I've been licensed to practice law since 1988. I started my practice in 93. I incorporated it in 2007. I represent largely public employees in discipline and discharge matters. I represent the Painters Union for the City and County of San Francisco in contract issues. I have a broad spectrum of clients. I represent small employers with issues with wage and hour and human resources issues. I do all spectrum of employment law. I don't do any workers' compensation. I don't do any Social Security disability. I do pension work. CalPERS and the individual county pension plan work. That's about it.
Jessica, can you talk a little bit about the specialized areas in which you practice?
Absolutely. So I'm a partner at a 5-attorney firm with offices in Oakland and San Francisco. And although, as you mentioned, there are some firms that are specialized in that they only take on certain types of employment cases, we have a pretty wide-ranging practice. Personally, I do everything from representing and advising executives and professionals in severance negotiations and contract negotiations, which are typically pre-litigation, to representing employees in individual litigation matters, both pre-litigation and litigation matters in cases such as sexual harassment, wrongful termination, whistleblower, retaliation, and discrimination cases, to class actions and mass actions in cases like independent contractor misclassification cases and other types of wage and hour violations.
And Lisa, would you like to jump in and tell us a little bit about the specific areas in which you practice?
Yes, so I'm the co-founding partner of a women-owned firm in San Francisco, Pennington Lawson. And our practice, and my practice in particular, encompasses a wide range of employment law issues. I litigate oftentimes for both employers and executives. I also do employment counseling of both employers and executives on a whole host of issues ranging from discrimination and harassment to termination issues to disability law and accommodation law. In addition, I do a lot of work advising executives and companies regarding employee mobility issues. So that includes cautioning people not to violate trade secret laws. And in particular, I have some niche expertise in litigating those mobility issues involving executives under fixed-term contracts in the entertainment industry.
So as our listeners probably noticed, between the three of you, you've listed quite a number of subspecialties. There may be some that are missing from what we discussed. I'm not going to ask you to tell me about areas you don't practice and limit you that way. But obviously, there's quite a number of niche areas. And it's helpful for people to understand what area they're really hitting before they go on and say, I found my lawyer, or even I'm looking for my lawyer. They probably need to know that. I'd like to ask you if you could go into a general description, all three of you, about some of the areas we've touched on some of these laundry lists and may not be apparent to listeners as to what we're talking about specifically. For example, let's talk a little bit about wage and hour claims. Who would like to go into a rough idea about wage and hour basics and really what the story is about wage and hour claims? Ellen, you have this look like you're ready to jump.
No, but I'm basically all employees in the state of California, or at least private employees, are entitled to be paid minimum wage and time and a half for anything over 8 hours a day, and double time for anything over 12 hours a day. There are rules on termination. The employee has to be paid all due immediately on termination. If an employee walks out without notice, they have to be paid within 72 hours, their final pay. The way to enforce the labor laws is to go to the Labor Commissioner's office. It's called the Department of Industrial Relations or the Labor Commissioner, and file a claim. And that office is a very employee-friendly office that will vigorously pursue claims against employers for violation of the labor laws. And that's really the best way, in my opinion, to get a remedy for a wage and hour violation. Other violations that are protected by, or other acts that are protected by the labor code, such as whistleblowing under 1102.5, you should probably seek an attorney to help with.
And one other footnote to what Ellen said, this is Lisa, I think employees who might have a panoply of claims need to think cautiously about going just to the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement, the Labor Commissioner's office, because that office is not authorized to pursue any other types of claims for employees. They also are not able to collect any type of attorney's fees for employees, so it's something that employees should think about, because it definitely narrows their potential recovery.
So if somebody goes first to the Labor Commissioner and reaches an agreement on back pay as far as wage and hour claim, does that preclude them from coming back and saying, oh, by the way, the workplace was hostile and that's why I left, so this is a wrongful termination? Or whatever other claim they may have?
No, that would not prevent them. That doesn't encompass a hostile environment claim or a discrimination claim or a wrongful termination claim. They may have a statute of limitations issue if they wait too long, but it should not preclude pursuit of another claim.
And let me turn...
Assuming that they haven't signed a general release.
That's true. And some employers do. That is tricky. And some employers would seek that. The Labor Commissioner's office usually isn't going to allow that.
And with that, let me turn it over to Stephen Hayward. You're on Your Legal Rights.
This question might be for all of them, but Ellen, I'm wondering if I go to pick a labor law lawyer, are you on the side more of the employees or the employer, or do you represent both?
I represent both, but I represent more employees than employers, just as a nature of my practice. I have some small employer clients in my roster of clients that I've had. I've represented one company since, I think, 2002. And human resources issues, but more employees.
And Steve, to be clear, are you referring to a labor claim or an employment law claim?
Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, if I'm picking a labor law lawyer, I'm a horseshoer by trade, and I'm wondering if when I pick a lawyer, if I should be very specific in that I need to look at it on the view of an employer, or do I need to specify that to a person that does labor law?
And are you a member of a union?
No, I'm not. I'm an independent business owner.
He's an employer. You have employees,
right.
Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Yes. So
are your employees organized and subject to a collective bargaining agreement?
No, they're not.
Okay, so you're probably...
I have a very small group.
You're probably looking for an employment lawyer, I would imagine, rather than a labor lawyer.
Got you. Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's the crux of what we need to be really getting to the bottom of tonight, is how somebody could go about finding the right lawyer. And
that's exactly what I'm asking, see, because I'm confused on it. When you guys say that you do labor law, it's not specific to say that, hey, we do labor law and we represent employees and unions, or employees with unions, or we represent the employer. So that's kind of what I'm trying to clarify this evening.
And you know, a good way to do that would be to type into your search little bar there exactly what your issue is. Horseshoer with employees seeks lawyer for wage and hour claim. In San Francisco Bay Area. And you'd come up with a whole bunch of websites, I'm sure.
Got you. Okay, cool. Well, thank you. I appreciate you guys taking my question.
Steve, thank you for joining us.
Yes, sir. Ciao.
We do have another call coming in. We're not quite there yet, so while we're waiting for that, we talked a little bit about each of your practices, and I didn't know if I gave everybody a chance to finish before Steve came in. Ellen, you're sitting with me, so I can see your face, but I can't see Lisa and Jessica.
I think you did, and I think Ellen was talking about the different potential. This is Jessica. Was talking about the different potential claims and rights under basic wage and hour law. One that I think is worth mentioning briefly is the issue of independent contractor misclassification that I alluded to earlier. That's a really hot topic in the Bay Area right now. One way that it comes up most often is in this gig economy that's become, a term that you either love or hate, or hate to love, depending on your perspective. There's been Uber, case against Uber, case against Lyft, case against many of the gig economy employers in the Bay Area. And what it's really looking at is trying to determine whether or not workers should be classified as employees of a company, or whether or not they're properly classified as independent contractors. And the reason that's really important, especially from the perspective of the employee, is if you're classified as an independent contractor, you lose many of the rights that Ellen was just describing under the labor code. And so whether or not you're properly classified or misclassified is a really essential question to talk through with an attorney. And so that comes up in many of the contexts in Bay Area companies at this point. The way you would know that typically is either when you're hired or when you get your tax forms, you would either be a W-2 employee or a 1099 independent contractor.
We're going to circle back to that in a moment, because one of the things that we're going to want to talk about is the idea that merely because the employer says you're an independent contractor doesn't necessarily mean it's so. It may turn out that you have a reason to challenge that if certain criteria aren't met. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. I see there's a call coming in from Julie in Alameda. Julie, we'll be with you in just a moment. We're going to circle back to you next. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW in San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And with that, we turn to Julie in Alameda. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much for having me. So I have a two-part question. First is it as it relates to how employers are viewing mental illness and dual diagnosis around mental illness, including substance abuse, and their ability to use the substance abuse piece and apply it to their conduct policy in order to use it as cause for termination. And then just the follow-up is, if someone thought they had a case around this, or if there was a case around this, what's the statute of limitations?
Okay, I'm not entirely clear. I think, are you asking what if the employer suspects that somebody's mentally ill? Maybe finds it hard to draw a line between whether it's mental illness or a substance abuse problem?
Yeah, so the situation is basically that I was diagnosed with multiple mental illness, like anxiety, depression, and panic attacks, and went into treatment with a dual diagnosis, including substance abuse. My employer took the substance abuse, assumed substance abuse, and then went and did an investigation to find evidence of substance abuse and used it and applied it to their conduct policy in order to terminate me right after I came back from medical leave.
Who is the employer? Private, or is it a private company or a public entity?
It's a public company, a very large tech company in the Bay Area.
But it's
not a
private
government entity,
it's
but one in the private sector?
Oh, no, it's private. Sorry, yeah.
Correct. Well, you know, basically all employment is at will. You can be terminated for any reason or no reason, subject to the caveat that it cannot be for a discriminatory or retaliatory reason. Misconduct caused by a disability is generally not protected. I've had a lot of cases with bipolar individuals who have had bipolar outbursts at work, who engage in threatening behavior, who have lost their jobs, and even though the misconduct is caused at least in part by the disability, generally unprotected. And there are some cases from the Ninth Circuit that do hold that it's protected conduct, but you'd have to be in federal court for that, and that's the last place a plaintiff wants to be.
Right.
And the drug use at work is generally... it's not something that's going to be a protected issue.
Yeah, well, it was actually not at work. It was outside of work with fellow employees. And it wasn't drug use. It was alcohol. So while everyone else was drinking as well. So it feels like they went and deliberately looked for information that they could apply. And they used information from, like, 3 years ago.
Well, they don't need a reason.
From a party. Yeah, true, I guess.
Any reason or no reason, and they don't need a reason. Did they actually put a reason in writing?
I'd have to go back and look at the letter.
The bottom line, as I understand it, and as Ellen has just said it, and we haven't heard yet from Lisa or Jessica, but as I understand it, it's... no reason or any reason, as long as it's not the wrong reason. So if, in fact, the reason is pretextual and the real reason is because of something that is protected, does that change things?
Good question.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So was the company on this is Jessica, was the company on notice of your diagnosis?
Yes. They were on notice of my diagnosis, and I was told that they would support me taking a medical leave of absence, which I then did. And upon my return, I was placed under administrative leave, and an investigation into my behavior conduct was ongoing. I was told my performance was outstanding. I have all my performance reviews. They're outstanding. I had just been recently given a raise, stock, a bonus. So they said it's not, your performance is not in question at all. The result of the investigation after they talked to a very limited number of people was that I had been drinking in front of people that worked for me and therefore it made them feel pressured. But not at work, you, by the way.
So you took a medical leave. How long after your medical leave were you fired?
2 weeks.
And you were fired for an incident that had happened how long previously?
3 years.
How long did you work for the company?
5 years.
I think it's worth talking through the facts in more detail with an attorney. That would be my assessment.
Thank you. Is there a statute of limitations then on this? Because it did happen almost a year ago, and I've been mulling over whether to take legal action for a long time. There's a part of me that wants to just move on, which I have very much so. And then there's a part of me that it still really bothers me. It feels like something wrong, that I was wronged, you know?
If you believe you're a victim of discrimination in terms of your employment, you have 364 days from the last act of discrimination to file a complaint with the Fair Employment and Housing Authority. This is an administrative remedy that you have to pursue before you can pursue a discrimination claim against your employer based on the Fair Employment and Housing Act. So if you Google the Fair Employment and Housing Authority on your computer, you will see how to file a complaint with them.
Okay. And so just to be clear, the types of lawyers that you would be looking for are those who specialize in things like disability, discrimination cases, and wrongful termination cases. Those are the types of keywords that you would be looking for.
Okay. And don't wait until the last day, file a claim, and then talk to a lawyer. You really need somebody who knows this field to help you with filing the claim. If I understand correctly, the claim could limit the remedies available if it's filed improvidently?
Well, and the Fair Employment and Housing Authority has people that help employees file these claims, and it can be done by a layperson. And in terms of, and you don't want to miss the 364-day limit, because then you can't do anything. But if you have filed the claim, then you ask them to investigate it. There's a box you check that asks them to investigate it. It'll be a year before you get a right to sue letter from them. And then you have another year, 364 days, from the date the right to sue letter is issued, to sue for discrimination. Now, the other causes of action are going to be governed by other statutes of limitation. If there's a written contract, it's 4 years. If it's an oral contract, it's 2 years. Personal injury, 2 years. And there are a bunch of different statutes of limitation that apply to the various available claims.
But Jeff's point is a good one, which is it's worth talking to an attorney as soon as possible, because depending on what, as Ellen said, what boxes you check when you file your form with the agency, it can limit your remedies moving forward. So it makes sense to talk to an attorney before doing that and to do that as soon as possible.
Okay. Julie, I hope that's of some help. I would encourage you to get that advice as quickly as possible. The Alameda County Bar Association has a lawyer referral service that can help. I would recommend it. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. And we'll turn to Tina in San Leandro. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello.
Tina, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Well, you know, I think I have one of every category of all three of you put together, it seems like. But, you know, I worked at a company for 15 years, a big, big company in the health field for 15 years. And I got hurt. And then in the meantime, they were writing me up for being tardy, and then they fired me on my 90th day of modified duty. And right now, currently, I'm homeless. It's been like 3.5 years, and they've just ruined my life. And, you know, I had a workers' comp lawyer, and I kind of, after 3.5 years, you know, it kind of went to trial, and I kind of got bullied into taken a settlement from the, you know, the judge and the lawyer, and saying if, you know, if I didn't take this, you know, and it went to trial, then I'd only get half. And that was over probably three months ago, and I was promised my check within 30 days, and still haven't got my check. And I'm, like, really frustrated because I'm homeless and being evicted. All my belongings are, you know, gone. You know, I mean, I've already been evicted from my home. And you know, believe it or not, I've been evicted from three different storage facilities for being late or leaving late. So I'm like, okay, the joke's on me, I guess. Okay, the joke's over. I'm done.
Without telling us the lawyer's name, have you circled back to your workers' comp lawyer to see if perhaps he or she's sitting on the check?
I left a message, and he had, you know, told me he was trying to get a hold of me to get me the check, you know, through Facebook or whatever. And I'm like, well, like, I'm going to get on Facebook. I don't have anything good to say about myself. You know, I mean, I haven't had any contact with anybody, and, you know, ever since I've left my job, and it's kind of sad, you know. But, I guess he had the check, and then now it's like he has to get another check issued. You know, in the meantime, you know, I mean, I'm just, like, pretty much, you know, being harassed everywhere I go. And, you know, I was harassed at work, you know, there was retaliation. I was kind of a whistleblower. What else? I think there was some discrimination. I mean, just, you know, and I was, like, one of the best employees. I trained all the people there, and it just kind of creeped up on me out of nowhere, you know, as soon as we moved from Hayward to San Leandro. You know, they kind of had their own thing, and we had a union. You know, I paid $100 a month for 15 years for the union to let me get fired. You know, and I went to the EEOC, I went to the NLRB.
Tina, the two places that I would... Tina, I don't mean to cut you off, but there's really two places you need to circle back to. As far as your workers' comp claim, you need to circle back to your workers' comp attorney. It could be that if you fall out of contact too long, if the attorney is waiting is holding a check from the employer that he or she did not deposit into a trust account, it may be that you've been out of touch too long, the check's expired, and they have to get it replaced. But ultimately, you have to circle back and stay in contact so they know how to get a hold of you, because they've got to put that check in your hand while you still have a chance to cash it. If you're represented by a union at your work, that's the other place where you might want to go. Start with your union steward. Start with that end. The union represents people. Just as my guests represent people in an employment context, your union has a steward who represents, was the go-between between you and the union. The union has lawyers. They would represent you otherwise if the claim hasn't already expired. And those are your two stops that I would recommend that you consider. Am I missing anything?
It was all just a big joke, you know. I mean, it was just I'm just appalled at how the system works, you know. I mean, it was just total fraud, if you ask me.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry we couldn't have been more help to you, but I would circle back to your union steward if there's anything there, or your workers' comp attorney if you have a check outstanding. They would be of most help to you, and I wish you the best of luck.
That was my main priority. I was a single mom, you know. I got to get to work. You know, high water. You know, I mean, I posted that on Facebook. You know, I mean, I could hardly walk, and I was on the employee shuttle, and they're still writing me up for being late. You know, and that's why I just, you know, there was a disability coordinator, and you know, with the union and my managers and myself, and that didn't, you know, that didn't happen. You know, there was no modifications. There was no nothing, you know. And I mean, everything that could have went wrong did go wrong. And, you know, everything that was wrong is wrong, you know, in my eye. I mean,
Tina, I wish we could be of more help for you. The best of laws sometimes are there to help everybody they can. There are times when it reaches the wrong result. I'm sorry if that happened in your case. The workers' comp lawyer is probably your next best stop. And I wish you luck. I hope that helps. And I hope there's a check sitting there for you tomorrow. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight's show is produced in conjunction with the California Lawyers Association Labor and Employment Section. We're discussing Employment Law 101, how to find a lawyer in this highly specialized area. And one thing you will notice from our callers is that one lawyer was calling with employment law questions and asking about how to find a labor lawyer. The most recent caller was calling about a labor law question and had some workers' comp discussion as well and asking for employment lawyers. This is a highly specialized area. It makes it very hard to find the right person for your case. My guests are all members of the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association. Lisa Lawson at Pennington Lawson in San Francisco has over 20 years' experience litigating high-stakes employment-related cases and advising California employers and executives. Ellen Mendelson of L&A Mendelson PC in San Francisco has over 25 years' experience focusing on representing public and other employees, not exclusively, but representing primarily employees. Jessica Riggin of Riggin, Highland & Riggin LLP in San Francisco litigates individual and class action cases on behalf of employees, including claims for violations of wage and hour and overtime laws, sexual harassment claims, whistleblower and retaliation claims, discrimination and equal pay claims. If you have questions for my guests, the phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. We're talking about the structure of practices and how to find the right lawyer. Feel free to call us with any of your employment law questions. You're not limited to where we are in the conversation. But if you have a case in litigation, please don't identify the parties unless you're asked to do so from our guests. We don't want to limit their ability to answer your questions. Again, our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Where we left off was about independent contractors, and merely the fact that your employer says you're going to be an independent contractor isn't necessarily the end of the story. Are there some things that people should be aware of to help them determine if they're really an independent contractor or not?
Yeah, this is Jessica. I can finish briefly talking about the standard for whether someone is misclassified as an independent contractor. There was recently a new California Supreme Court decision that is a very employee-friendly decision. This applies to non-exempt employees, meaning those who would otherwise be paid on an hourly, not a salaried basis. And it's a three-prong test called the ABC test. And so all of these need to be met in order for the employee to be properly classified as an independent contractor. So first is that the worker needs to be free from the control and direction of the hiring entity. The second is that the worker needs to perform work that is outside the usual course of business. And the third is that the worker is customarily engaged in an independently established trade, occupation, or business of the same nature as the work performed. And so I can talk a little bit about what each of those means, but the bottom line is, and again, I would emphasize what I said earlier, I think if you think you've been misclassified as an independent contractor, that has really important implications for your rights under the labor code, and it's going to be fact-specific, so I would consult an attorney to talk through those issues because it's going to be applying the facts of your particular situation to this new legal test. But it's going to be looking at how much control the employer has over your work situation, whether or not the work that you perform falls within the work that your employer typically performs. So, you know, is for example the person that I, at my law firm, is it a paralegal, someone who performs work within our usual business, or is it someone who's coming in to paint the walls, right, which is not something that's in our normal course of business, and the third factor is a worker customarily engaged in an independently established trade. So does that worker have his or her own independently established business?
So a messenger working for you as a messenger might be more likely classified as an employee if it's something he or she does every day for you and you alone. Whereas if it's somebody that this is their trade, you're one of their stops, maybe not so.
That would be one factor to consider, yes.
Basically, my opinion under Dynamex is there is no more independent contractors in the state of California.
I think it's going to be very difficult to meet that test.
Yes.
Very, very difficult.
So with that, that's one other area where it'd be helpful for someone to get the advice of a lawyer before making that decision themselves. Maybe you would be walking away from certain rights because you take it for granted and the law changes.
Yeah, and I've had calls from Bar Association referrals that have asked whether they can employ people as an independent contractor. And while I can't give advice to these people, I can tell them what the law says and that basically it would be a very heavy burden to prove that somebody you were paying money to in terms of your business was an independent contractor. Unless, of course, they're a painter or a plumber or something like that.
Let me turn to Reed in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes, I'm having an issue with my job. Well, my coworker is. We have a boss who's targeting him for his disability. He was hired with this disability that was well known, and there were a few jobs that he couldn't perform, which had been going on for about 2.5 years until a new boss came on, and she made him get a doctor's note for his injury and turned around and tried to say that he couldn't perform the essential job functions. But HR sided with him and said no, because he's a coordinator in his title and because of the lifting requirements are only 20, it's preferred that they can lift 25 pounds or more, not required. Because of those two things, he's fulfilling his job. And while she was going through these back and forth about that with HR, she creates a new job title and new job description that changes only the word coordinator and makes the word preferred required. Fast forward a year, we all get new job titles, and his work slip is expired, so she asks for another one. He gets another one, brings it to them, and she rejects it and says, no, you don't fit the qualifications of the job. We'll have to let you go.
So
that's where we're at right now. He hasn't been let go yet, but it's looking like that's where it's going.
So it sounds like they rewrote the job description in order to put this person who was already hired on the wrong side of the abilities required?
Yes.
So I'll turn to my guest. Can they do that?
Maybe that's a good question for Lisa, who I know counsels employers on these issues often.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if that was done with the intent of just getting rid of the employee, that would suggest discrimination. But at the same time, you know, there are circumstances that cause employers' workforces and needs to change. So without knowing more about the specifics, I can't say one way or the other if that's unlawful.
Okay. I mean, it was the same job, but only two changes on the wording. The exact ones that were being told to her by HR, he's fine. This is okay.
Well, and can they accommodate him to relieve him of those? And lifting is generally a thing that that an employer can accommodate an employee for.
Well, he never asked for an accommodation because he was he could do some of the work. He could just not lift the thing up into the freezer. So, I mean, but he could do everything else of the task.
If he hasn't asked for an accommodation, then how can we allege that the employer changed the job description to bar him from being able to perform the job?
Because she changed it the day before she agreed to the changes with HR, where HR was siding with him. And the job was created the day before, and it only had the two changes of what HR was saying this is why he's okay for the job. You can't get rid of him.
So I think some of the, this is Jessica, some of the things that I would be looking at and talking to your friend about are, you know, why did the job description change? Because, you know, job descriptions on their own aren't going to be controlling, right? So if he's been able to perform the job for a number of years without any accommodation, then it stands to reason that he's going to be able to continue to perform the job without an accommodation. And, you know, I think we talked earlier about, you know, the need for, or maybe we didn't.
I hate to cut us off, but we are out of time. For right now, that'll be the last word on the moment. Reed, if you stay on the line, and Jane, I know you're holding. If you stay on the line, we can take your call off the air. But for right now, we're out of time. I'm going to have to turn to my guests and give each of you about 30 to 45 seconds if there's any last-minute comments you want to make or in summary.
Well, if you have legal issues and don't know what kind of employment lawyer you need, call the San Francisco Bar Association. Their number is 415-989-1616 or any of the other bar associations, and ask for a referral to an employment attorney who practices in the specific area that you need someone. And you know what happens frequently, the Bar Association calls the screeners, and the screener, I say, you know, she needs this kind of attorney. So that's how you can find the right attorney.
Jessica, any last thoughts?
Yes, I'd echo that and just briefly say, if you think you're having an issue at work, call an attorney. Find out if you're having an issue, or talk to one of the great nonprofits that we have in our area, including Legal Aid at Work or East Bay Community Law Center. They have workers' rights clinics and fact sheets online that are a wealth of information. And so if you think you're having an issue, contact an attorney or one of those great nonprofits who can point you in the right direction.
And this is Lisa. You know, further advice, once you talk to an attorney, try to reach out to more than one, because you might find that one attorney's impression of your case is different than another's, and it's always good to get multiple perspectives. In addition, if you do end up litigating, you're going to spend a lot of time with that attorney, and you want to make sure that the connection that you feel with them is a good one and a positive one.
Thank you both. Thank you all for joining us. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, in conjunction with the Labor and Employment section of the California Lawyers Association, we've been talking about Employment Law 101, how to find the right lawyer in this highly specialized area. My guest tonight, Jessica Riggin of Redgin, Highland & Riggin, LLP in San Francisco, Lisa Lawson of Pennington Lawson in San Francisco, and Ellen Mendelson of LNA Mendelson PC in San Francisco. With that, Ellen, Jessica, Lisa, thank you all for joining us tonight. We'll return next week with Your Legal Rights, where we will offer tax tips. In addition, there will also be our annual Call a CPA night. Again, if you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 in San Francisco, for production assistant Martin McLean and at the controls, Joanne Marr, I'm Jeff Hayden. Our thanks to you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.